You are listening to a Blazing Caribou Studios production.
Bonus. Something extra that is good. B-O-N-U-S. Bonus.
Welcome into another episode of Two Peas. I am so excited that you joined us yet again, and not only that, but in the month of October, which a lot of folks that listen regularly will know this is probably my favorite month of the podcast because we do all horror and Halloween themed episodes. So we have another one here for you this week, October 2019, and we are counting down. Well, I'll tell you what, before I tell you what we're counting down is if you didn't read the show title when you clicked on the link here, why don't we say hello to my special guest? You know, this guy is one of my favorites. I've been listening to his podcast for a few years now. I've been on there several times. I think I'm basically a member of his podcast. I've been on so frequently. But let's say what's up to Justin. He's back from So I Married a Movie Geek, Mr. Justin Winters. How you doing, brother?
Gerald, always a pleasure. What's going on, man?
Absolutely, man. I have the exact same sentiment. It's such a pleasure when you and I get together. You're from North Carolina originally, which is where I'm sitting right now.
Mm-hmm.
And yep. we have that connection. We're both Tar Heel fans, and you're an actual Tar Heel.
I think I've told Gerald, and you know, we have other good friend Wes, who's there in North Carolina as well. I was like, guys, I miss it in North Carolina. Every time that you're like at Bojangles late at night, you know, having a spicy chicken biscuit with some bow rounds, you know, a sweet tea, just like look up at the sky at me and like think of me, like that American Tale song. We could like sing together, and it's like I'm eating the Bojangles through you. So
that's right, dude. You're inside me while I'm eating my Bojangles.
But you got a podcast, you got kids, you know, we vibe, Gerald. I love talking to you, man.
Absolutely, man. Same here. And a funny little tidbit about that. We had thawed out some chicken breasts and we were going to make dinner this evening, and the chicken breasts were still frozen. So my wife's like, well, let's just throw some of these dinosaur chicken nuggets in the oven. You know, we cooked chicken nuggets and the family had chicken nuggets and it was really healthy dinner this evening. But anyway, with my chicken nuggets, I had some leftover honey mustard from Bojangles, the little dipping sauces.
You talking?
So I pulled those suckers out.
That's solid gold, man.
That's a delicacy right there, brother.
Well, I'm over here eating, I already told Gerald, I'm eating cotton candy grapes because I just rushed home because I'm here on the West Coast. And I'm two months into a reduced sugar whole diet thing. So
I've been following that a little bit on social media. I'm proud of you, man. I don't know, I guess getting over that. How long did it, was it like the first week was the hardest probably?
Yeah, if you get through the first like week and a half, and then you start to feel like the changes and like these things that you're like, for a long time I've been like, man, this sucks, why does this happen? And you're like, whoa, like this really helps. You'll just like you'll never look back. Like our buddy Nick from Epic Film Guys, I know he's going really well as well. Basically, I was 2 weeks in, and I'm like, Nick, you should do this. And he's like, I'm going to do it. And so he's doing the same thing, and it's working wonders for him. So
yeah, that's awesome.
We're like the reduced sugar, warriors over here. We're standing up.
I should do it, man. We should start like a boy band or something. The first sugar-free boy band. I don't know. We'll figure something out.
Well, I work on a medical show, and I talk about health all the time, but I'm like trying to like do like a big sugar detox segment on the show because I'm such a believer for it. So I say like if you could try it for like a couple weeks and just see how it works for you. I just tried to reduce as much added sugar. Which means, you know, fruit and stuff is okay, you know, especially whole food fruit. But yeah. if you were like me and drank a lot of nasty syrups in your coffees, M&M's, ice cream, soda, kick that out the window for a couple weeks and just see how it makes you feel. So
yeah, I think I might have to be honest. You guys are inspirational, I'll put it that way, but I've been following it over there.
You got a little one though, man. I know how hard it is, and I think that was like one of the reasons that I got like really deep into my sugar addiction, because you just like need the fuel, man, to like go.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So it props to you. You're in the middle of it, so but you know, you can still try it. And you, like I said, one of the biggest things is you instantly get more energy. You're like, that fucking sugar sucked out all my energy. And that like totally like steamrolls into like, oh, I can do this and I can do that, you know?
That's crazy.
So
I guess it's funny that we're talking about this on the heels of our top five Halloween candies.
You know, I love some talking about some candy and some movie theater snacks. So I would have been down for that too.
Man.
So.
It's all good, man. So look, so we're in October, we're two P's, we're doing our top fives like we always do, and they're all Halloween themed. So, you know, last year I didn't get to do this particular topic last October, and I was like, you know, I really, really want to do this. So obviously a year cycled around, we're back to October, and I was like, here we go. And I put this one on the calendar and I hit you up immediately. Justin Winters, what are we counting down today, brother?
I mean, my boy, Stephen King, Stephen King movies.
That's it.
I mean, I'm super excited. I'm running low on energy because, you know,
sugar,
but I got cotton candy grapes. And once you said Stephen King, I'm like, I'm there, bro. I'm there. I've got a huge, huge, long love of Stephen King. So I'm down to talk some King with you, man.
Same here, man. I know you've done a Stephen King fantasy movie draft over there, and what was that? A year? Was that last year? Or was that a couple years ago?
It was a couple years ago, but
yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
Just like you, October is my favorite month on our podcast too, because I basically, you know, force my wife Chrissy to watch a bunch of horror movies, and a lot of those over the years have been Stephen King movies because of my love of the books and, you know, all the movies. So he comes up a lot on the podcast.
Well, you know, there's a lot to pull from, and I was doing a little bit of research in this past week or so getting ready for the episode. There's some that for me that came to mind right away. There were some that I was kind of digging like, oh, yeah, you know, I kind of forgot he was attached to that, or, you know, maybe I need to revisit this one. And I watched a couple movies that I hadn't seen in several years that really kind of jarred my memory a little bit. What about you, man? I mean, I know you did the fantasy draft a couple years ago, and I know you love King. Did you kind of mix it up a little bit, or do you have the same five favorites that are kind of staples for you?
I told you before we started taping, this is like an emotional thing. Like I have a hard time picking, you know, my favorite 10, let alone my favorite five. Like, so right. I think I even talked to you. I was like, can we do like what five we think are most underrated or five most surprising that I might
You did ask me that. I forgot about that.
Because I was like, I'll get those lists for you right quick. But once you talk about faves, like, I mean, you're a little older than me, but I was a Steven kid. Steven Spielberg and Stephen King. Like, those two names just really dominated my childhood. So,
yeah.
Just like choosing Spielberg films, which I have some controversial favorites. I have some controversial favorites for Stephen King movies. So,
well, that's cool, man. I mean, you know, because you listen to the show, but I mean, we like to bring our guests, like you said, their favorites. You know, I don't like to do like, what's the top five, you know, best, that consensus or whatever. Just what's your favorite? What do you enjoy the most? You know, like, kind of an analogy I'll use is like when we do our music episodes, it's like if you're making a playlist of whatever artist we're talking about, what are the 5 or 10 songs that you put on the playlist? And it's very similar in this regard too when I talk about movies. So what Stephen King, you know, I have 10 here in front of me that I'm going to talk about tonight, including my honorable mentions. So these are the 10 that I would watch in the month of October if I could only fit in 10 movies. So
yeah,
a couple of them, and I don't want to give away any spoilers, but a couple of them are not necessarily horror centric. But they are Stephen King adaptations. So, and also a little asterisk I just want to mention real quick, Justin. We decided when we were chatting online a couple weeks ago about this, that we're going to include any film that is an adaptation of a Stephen King work. And that includes any streaming services or television adaptations, correct?
Correct.
So not to give anything away, but that is eligible as well. Because initially when I pitched it to you, I said theatrical releases. And not saying that we won't have crossover as it is anyway, because there's some that are just so good, man, and so iconic. But I thought maybe that would limit it a little bit more, because there are some that have gone out into other circles and are just as great. So all of it is eligible. Stephen King, the king, is what we're going to talk about tonight. So if you're ready, Mr. Winters, I'm going to let you get us started, man. You got to get some of that, you know, shake some of that emotion off.
Jeez Louise.
You know, there's always a 1 in 300,000 trillion chance that Stephen King will listen to this. So make him proud. You know what I mean?
Oh, gosh.
What's your number 5, buddy? Stephen King adapted film.
I'm going to start hot with this one, and this one actually was my number 6 until just recently, but I'm going to put it here. I consider it a Kill Bill situation, but I'm going to take the first one. I'm going to put it as my number 5 right now.
Okay, what year? What adaptation?
It is the 2017 film.
Guys! Don't tell me that.
Yeah. George, you wore galoshes.
Whose sneaker is it? It's Betty Ripsom's.
What if she's still here?
Eddie, come on!
My mom will have an aneurysm, okay? If she finds out that we're playing down here, I'm serious. Bill?
If I was Betty Ripsom, I would want us to find me. Georgie, too.
What if I don't want to find them? I mean, no offense, Bill, but I don't want to end up like... I don't want to go missing either.
Okay. That's in my honorable mentions, that particular version. While we're on the subject, and of course, we're recording this in early to mid-September.
Yes.
So It Chapter 2 just came out. I saw it a few days ago. Have you had a chance to see it yet?
I took my mother-in-law, my wife's mother, on Grandparents Day. So,
oh, wow. Happy Grandparents Day.
The two of us went and saw... We saw It Chapter 1, or I guess it was just called It. And then we've seen both of them, just me and her, in the theater. So we went and saw that, and it was a very interesting experience. So,
yeah, that was not going to be on my list. So if it's not on yours, then we can just... I don't want to spoil it because it's a new movie, but...
I will say that watching the second one, that's what caused me to bump this one up a little bit because...
Oh, okay. Interesting.
As a lover of Stephen King books first... It was the first book of his that I read. It was like the gateway book for him. Like, I remember, you know, third or fourth grade, like, it was all about R.L. Stein, you know, when you were a kid. And at some point, I remember as a kid thinking, like, I need something harder, you know? I need something, like, that I shouldn't be reading. And I found It, and that was the first book I read. Right. And, you know, I was kind of similar to the ages of the kids in that book, and the ages of the kids in the, you know, this 2017 film. So that's what just kind of like, I love both chapters, and I can see why a lot of people won't like the second one in particular, right. But right. As a person that loves the book and, you know, just loves everything in terms of it, including the miniseries, I forgive some of the mess.
Well, I was wondering if you might pull the miniseries.
Yeah.
I guess you, do you prefer this, now that you've seen chapter two, do you prefer this theatrical kind of version?
1,000% Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Cool, put them together. They're basically the length of the miniseries. And, you know, I like the mini series, but it's very like maudlin and like almost like it's part of it is like a Lifetime movie when you look at that now in terms of the drama and some of the acting. But this new one, just, you know, head and shoulders. The one thing about this new one, which was like the whole thing, the running plot of talking about endings to books and to films and then being disappointing. And then the ending of this new one, I've heard a lot of people have trouble with. But I'm like, you know, the book is like super weird. And have you seen the ending of the miniseries? So,
you know,
like I said, I think it's the best version of the book we've gotten so far. And I liked it a lot. So,
well, I like the pick. It would have been my number seven. So it's in my honorable mentions. It, Pennywise that Bill Skarsgård kind of recreated, it very, very villainous and just much more menacing than Tim Curry. Tim Curry is an iconic kind of like, and that was 1990, I think. So I don't even want to say 80s because I think that was 1990, the miniseries. But
both of them are great, guys. We don't have to choose one.
Both of them are awesome. I agree 100%. I just like the menacing kind of recreation that Skarsgård did there. The second chapter got a little fucking off the rails for me, but like you said, the book is. So, I mean,
the book's like 1,100 pages or whatever, guys.
Right.
Stephen King likes to write, man. He likes to write.
Yeah,
so
no, he kept writing and writing and writing on this one. So, It from 2017 is your number five. I like the pick. And I guess what I was trying to get at in a roundabout way there is I definitely prefer theatrically chapter one, I guess it would be considered, as opposed to the one that just came out. But together, it's a fucked up ride, and you should check it out if you're a Stephen King fan. So, all right, my number five is a movie that you and I have actually had an opportunity to talk about before, which I was making my list, and I was narrowing it down, and I was just like, you know what, man, it's Stephen King, who is arguably my favorite author, definitely one of them, and no question, my favorite filmmaker, probably my number two or three favorite filmmaker, is John Carpenter. So we have them coming together here in 1983 for a movie called Christine,
which
is my number five, which you and I have talked about before. I don't know if you recall, but I came on your show and we did the draft for the 83 movies when I was in the 80s tournament. And I had to take this one, man. I think I got it like fourth round or something, or maybe even the fifth round. And everybody kind of gave me shit about it a little bit. Everybody was kind of surprised by the pick on that draft, I recall. But I just love this movie, man. I mean, the imagery, it's 80s camp, you know, and it's John Carpenter and it's Stephen King, which is really the reason. But I mean, you've got just the amazing character actor Keith Gordon in there, just kind of a tortured character in this movie. Starts out so kind of dorky and innocent. And this car kind of in a way possesses him as the movie continues to unfold. And there's a lot of great imagery that's very iconic that's been kind of recreated throughout the horror genre in the last 20 or 30 years, like the scene with the car that's on fire that's kind of slowly chasing him down the road there. I just love this movie, man. The imagery, Carpenter, King, it's everything that I could have asked for. The 80s. So I love Christine, man. What do you think?
I love it too. It's such a fun movie. Like it shit on paper and the book. I mean, the book comes off kind of corny as well, but you're like, this movie should not work, but it does. And it's largely because of, you know, Carpenter and the performances and the great imagery, the score. Oh my God. So yeah. I love it. I think it's great. It's an honorable mention on my list as well. So.
Awesome, man. And we're talking about it twice in the last like year. So that's cool. Christine didn't get enough love, in my opinion. So.
We probably just said the exact same thing that we said back then.
I should have just used the audio from all of our previous shows together.
Frank invited, man. I didn't even need to be here, Gerald. Come on.
Be like a Disney remake, basically. Okay. All right. Let's see. Where are we at? So we're up to year number four, man. What do you got?
My number four, and I think it came out in 88, but my number four is the Pet Sematary, the original film.
I got to tell you, man, come at me right now because I like the new one.
Come at me, Gerald.
I love the new one.
I am behind and haven't seen it yet.
Okay, I'm not going to talk about...
I'm also kind of scared, you know? I'm kind of scared. So as a person that has been burned in the past by remakes of some of my favorite films, like, you know, RoboCop and Total Recall. And,
sure.
Point Break. I'm hesitant.
No question.
But in terms of the original, the 88 version, that movie's just fucking, like, awesome and nasty at some, like, at points. Like, the book is nasty as well, but I remember being just, like, really frightened by that movie and some of the shit in that movie. Zelda in that movie, of course, the creepy kid and stuff. And to revisit it after having kids and, you know, to see it in a whole new light, I just think it's just a perfect, like, encapsulation of the book and kind of Stephen King as a writer and the kind of stuff that kind of gets under your skin and the performances in that movie. Fred Gwynne, of course. I mean,
it's just a
classic for me because I think I read the book before seeing the movie and it's one of those ones where it's like, yeah, he actually, the filmmaker, Mary Lambert did it justice. This is a great film. So
yeah, it was 89 on that
89
version.
Yeah. There you
and
go.
I love it. I mean, I don't want anybody to mistake what I'm saying. I agree with you 100% when it comes to being scared and kind of fearful of remakes, especially when you're talking about such an iconic kind of Stephen King adaptation that already exists. And this won't be the last one we get, trust me. I mean, we were just talking about It, which is basically a remake from, I mean, they've already done it, not theatrically, but what with Pet Sematary, I like, or just in general, I like when remakes are a reimagining. They have the base kind of story is there, the narrative is the same, but they throw in these little differences that kind of surprise you if you're familiar with the original or the book. Mm-hmm. And they do that really, really well in the 2019 version. When I wrote my little review on Letterboxd or whatever, the title was Sometimes Remade is Better, you know, which is a play on.
You're building it up. I'm going to have to watch it soon, Gerald, and get back at you,
classic,
man.
Classic tagline. But with that being said, I absolutely adore the 89 version. And I at a minimum, I would say I like them equally. So I'll put it that way.
And I mean, just the story of Pet Sematary is just very alluring. I mean, who hasn't thought about if you lose someone you love or in case, you know, a pet, something you love, what wouldn't you do to have that person or pet back?
Right.
You would probably do anything at some point. And so you totally get what's going on. At some point it goes off the rails and it goes to frightening places. So,
and you're like, wow, I probably shouldn't have done this. and I cut out sugar this week. What am I doing?
Like I said, I've revisited since a few times and it totally holds up. So, but I'll check out this remake and I'll get back to you, Gerald.
Yeah, let me know, man. I mean, seriously, let me know. I'm curious. You know, people that are like purists of the original, I'm curious. So let me know for sure. All right, man. So let's see. My number four is the first of two movies that would be considered not horror movies. I mean, they have maybe elements of horror sprinkled throughout, but they're not horror films. They are films based on Stephen King works, though. So my number four is, in my opinion, one of the greatest movies ever made, bro. And it was came out the year I graduated high school. It really hit me. That year, cinema really hit me. There was a lot of movies that came out that particular year. And that was really when I started kind of frequenting the movie theater. And this was one of the ones that I caught in the theater when it was released. But it's The Shawshank Redemption from 1994.
Well, are you talking about the number one movie on IMDb, Shawshank Redemption, Gerald?
You never heard of it? I love this film, man. I mean, I feel like this was going to be a bit of a no-brainer, and I don't know if it might be crossover with you too, but just such a touching story to originate from a King work, which has happened before, but it's a rare thing. I mean, it's usually what we've been talking about, where it's just really fucked up storylines and over-the-top characters and supernatural things and space. And I mean, it's just like all this weird shit coming at you. But with Shawshank Redemption, it's a very subdued kind of normal human story, and it's a character piece between Andy and Red and the friendship and the relationship that's built there. kind of the mystery surrounding Andy's story that you learn as the movie goes on or the book goes on. Just a lot of great colorful characters in there. Brooks, you know, just such a touching moment with him. And it just makes you feel, man. It's a very emotional film. And it's a fun watch for me. It's got a high rewatchability factor for a non-horror film for me, too. So I love The Shawshank Redemption, man. It's one of my favorites. Morgan Freeman's one of his all-time best performances, in my opinion. So I didn't want to leave it off, man. I love this movie, so it's my number four.
How many cable channels have been propped up by The Shawshank Redemption over the years? would we even have TBS if it wasn't for The Shawshank Redemption? I think that's a real big reason why it's number one on IMDb, because at any time it's on cable. Like, playing, yeah. So
it's like this and like the Adam Sandler comedies from the early 2000s, you know, holding TNT together, you know. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's everywhere, you know. It is such a timeless film, though. I mean, you're a fan of this one, right?
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, it's in my honorable mentions. I think it's a classic. I love me some Morgan Freeman. But I kind of like slot it on my top 10 down a little lower, just because it's not from a novel, and I'm kind of like a, you know, more of a novel Stephen King person than like some of his short stories or even like his Bachman stuff. I really wasn't interested in. So I think it's great. I think it's a great film, but my five are like straight up, you know what? I'm telling a lie as I look at one of these. So just whatever I just said is out the window. But in general, I do like the novels more. I think Shawshank is great. You can't really say anything bad about it. So
yeah. Awesome, man. Yeah, don't get all like Stephen King purist snobby on me, okay? You know, well, that was only, you know, 200 pages. That wasn't officially, like, don't do that thing. I can't do that right now. All right, so you're up, brother. What's your number three?
My number three is, in my eyes, one of the best book to screen adaptations of any of Stephen King's stories across the board. Mm. And it's the first one that I saw in the theater as a kid. Mm. So that was very like big to me. And sure. I think the performances across the board are amazing. I think it's a tall thriller that keeps you on the edge of your seat. I still remember watching it in the theater with my dad. I'm talking about Misery.
What? You've been out of your room.
No, I haven't.
Paul, my little ceramic penguin in the study always faces due south.
I don't know what you're talking about. Ceramic penguin.
Is this what you're looking for? I know you've been out twice, Paul. First, I couldn't figure out how you did it. But last night, I found your key. I know I left my scrapbook out. I can imagine what you might be thinking of me. But you see, Paul, it's all okay. Last night it came so clear. I realize you just need more time. Eventually you'll come to accept the idea of being here. Paul, do you know about the early days at the Kimberley Diamond Mines? Do you know what they did to the native workers who stole diamonds? Don't worry, they didn't kill them. That would be like junking a Mercedes just because it had a broken spring. No, if they caught them, they had to make sure they could go on working, but they also had to make sure they could never run away. The operation was called hobbling.
Danny, whatever you think I'm not doing, please don't do it. Annie, for God's...
Shh, darling. Trust me.
God's sake.
It's for the best.
Annie, please!
Almost done. Just one more. God, I love you.
And we finally have crossover.
Ah...
It's coming up on my list, but I agree with everything you've said so far. Go ahead.
Misery, amazing book. Just like fucking front cover to back. Just you're just riveted on the edge of your seat. You know, this Annie Wilkes character is just like unlike any character that you've read in a book. And then the main character, you instantly sympathize with this person. You're like, oh my God, he's stuck here. What is he going to do? And, you know, you're worried after you read this book, are they going to be able to do this? Rob Reiner of Princess Bride, he's going to do it? Okay. Amazing. Amazing film. You know, still holds up. Kathy Bates gives one of the best performances ever in any film, any kind of genre. And I love the book and I love the movie. And like I said, in terms of straight adaptation from, you know, the book to the movie, I think it's one of the best, like most perfect ones. So,
yeah, I'm going to be talking about it later, so I'll hold a couple comments. But I agree with everything you said wholeheartedly. And I absolutely love Misery. I actually named it last October when we had our round of Halloween episodes. We did 90s horror. And I named it in my top five 90s horror films. And I got a little bit of shit from Justin and Loy Sauce from the Epic Film Guys because they wanted to say it was a psychological thriller and, you know, so on and so forth. I'm like, all right, it's okay.
But you know me.
I get it.
There's nothing worse than a genre debate. Like, who fucking cares, man? Horror should be as, you know, wide a genre and a net as we want it to be. Like,
that's,
you know,
true. I get the argument. I just don't like to pigeonhole myself into it because, you know.
Yeah.
It was horrific. It's horrific, right? So, I mean, it's...
Hey, put yourself in that man's shoes. You would be horrified, you know? So, wow. There you go.
I'm going to be talking about Misery later, though, but it's a great pick, man. I love it. All right, so my number three, buddy, is... All right, let me get this out of the way right now, okay? Let me just go ahead and say it. And I assume this is crossover with you, too, but maybe not, because you might be doing something different over there this year than when we talked the last time. In fact, you and I have talked about this one before, too. Oh, my God. I just remembered that.
Jesus
Christ. We did it. Well, I'll just hang on. We'll just bring the audio from our old episode. Hang on.
You know, we could just like talk off air about these things over and over.
I know. This is vaguely familiar. Okay. So my number three, I mean, and what I was going to say is, let me just get out of the way. I know, okay, that publicly it's been proven or whatever that Stephen King himself was not a fan of this version or this adaptation to the screen. I'm naming it because of the effect that it had on me at a young age and because of its rewatchability factor and just that I cannot get it out of my head in the last 30 years since I saw it. I mean, I just saw it when I was early. I was 13 or 14 the first time I saw it, and it's literally been in my mind ever since. The Shining from 1980 is my number three. We talked about this, Justin, when we did our winter movies. You remember that?
We did. And
we did.
I will let you proceed, and I will talk about this film later.
I see. Yeah, I thought we might. And then I remembered we talked about it on our winter movies. Did we both name it on that one as well?
I'm pretty sure we did.
We got to come up with some like out of the box shows the next time you come on. Because
how can we spin this again, and so we can talk about these same movies again soon?
Top five movies featuring hotels. What do you think you're going to put on there? All right. So, yeah, I mean, real quick, I'll just say then, I mean, 1980, so it's an 80s film. Stanley Kubrick is a fucked up filmmaker who has a knack for getting his vision across to the screen in a very visual way. You know, he tells the story with a lot of imagery and not a whole lot of dialogue. You know, the scene with the blood coming out of the elevator, the twins in the hallway, the kind of maze in the snow. The Jack Nicholson's face coming through the door, you know, that's obviously one of the most iconic scenes really in all of film, but definitely in horror films. Just all that imagery is just embedded in the horror culture now. So many shots that came from this movie that Kubrick created in 1980 are just regurgitated. And I'm not saying that I don't like some of them, but I mean, they're just the homage to The Shining that is just seen over and over again. You know, movies, even recently, like It Follows, What else? Midsummer that just came out. There's a really, did you ever see Midsummer? What a fucked up venture that was, huh? Did you see that?
Fucking loved it. I cannot wait I can't wait to see the director's cut.
I fucking loved it too. I know that's not King, but I loved it too. But anyway, there's a shot in there, of, you know, the overhead of the road as they're driving down it, which is the opening to The Shining. And I immediately thought of that right away when I saw that. But, you know, it's just such a cult classic, man. And it just really kind of reinvented the genre. It gave a different layer to Jack Nicholson's career and kind of, you know, gave him that kind of eerie, kind of creepy guy angle to his kind of character. And he's got that kind of tucked in his pocket that he can pull out whenever he wants. So I just love it, man. I mean, I could literally talk. We could do a whole show about The Shining, which apparently we have before. But I love it, man. It's definitely one of my favorite movies ever. So The Shining is my number three, man.
Coming in the two peas in a pod, Shining Mega Mix. Where we just meld all this stuff together.
Oh, man. The Shining Christine episode. Have we done that? I think we've done that. All right, man. So that's my number three. I'll let you talk a little bit about it later. And that brings us up to your number three. What do you got?
I've already done my number three. That was Misery. So I'm up to number two.
Oh, I'm so sorry, man. Go ahead. You're right. You're number two.
I'm wondering if we might cross over on this one. This is the one on my list that's not a novel that I mistakenly mentioned earlier. But it feels like home every time I watch it. It's one of the best film versions in my eyes of friendship as a kid and being with your buddies and just like, you know, fucking off and just, you know, doing whatever. It's Stand By Me. So
sure it is. And that is definite fucking crossover.
God damn it, Daryl.
Definite. Hey, I can't not put it on my list. You know, I was like, let me see what he names and I'll alternate out one of my honorables. But if it's Stand By Me, I can't change it. But go ahead, talk about it and then I'll talk about it later.
Like, I mean, what can be, if you've seen Stand By Me, you understand. I mean, it's set in the 50s, 50s, 60s? What
50s, I believe, yeah.
But you watch it. I mean, I watched it in the 80s or whatever. You're like, I totally, like, this is me and my friends. Like, this is us. This is how we talk to each other. And maybe me and my friends didn't go and see about a dead body or anything, but, you know. At some point, we did things that we weren't supposed to do. Did things we weren't supposed to do. I don't know.
Come clean. What'd you do?
I feel
like you're hesitant.
I feel like that movie's perfectly cast. You know, River Phoenix in that movie is like one of the rawest portrayals of a kid. Corey Feldman, Jerry O'Connell, Will Wheaton, Kiefer Sutherland, you know, yeah, everybody,
Cusack.
Everybody in that movie, is awesome. Rob Reiner did a great job with it. And, it's got one of my favorite scenes in any movie as a kid. And I still reference it, you know, every so often to this day is the whole puking scene, the pie eating scene.
Oh, like, yeah, that's great.
It's just catnip as a kid. That scene is just, we wore out the VHS tape just like rewinding it and watching that scene and rewinding it over and over again because it's one of those things where you're like, that sounds like a story you would tell to your friends. And to see it, you know, lovingly recreated in this film.
Right, right.
It is great. I just think that's a perfect film, so.
What he wanted was revenge. And right before he was introduced, he'd gotten ready for it.
Principal John Wiggins! And our celebrity contestant from KLAM in Portland, the boss man himself, Bob Cornell!
Hey, from the rags to stacks, it's the best on wax. How about another double gold moldy twin spin sound sandwich for KLAM in Portland? It's
done!
Lord S! Lord S! Lord S!
Diving into his fifth pie, Lord S began to imagine that he wasn't eating pies. He pretended he was eating cow flops and rat guts and blueberry sauce.
Lord S! Lord S! Lord S! Lord S!
Slowly,
A sound started to build in Lardass' stomach. A strange and scary sound, like a log truck coming at you at 100 miles an hour. Suddenly, Lardass opened his mouth. Before Bill Travis knew it, he was covered with 5 pies worth of used blueberries. The women in the audience screamed. Boss man Bob Cormier took one look at Bill Travis and barfed on Principal Wiggins. Principal Wiggins barfed on the lumberjack that was sitting next to him. Mayor Grundy barfed on his wife's tits. But when the smell hit the crowd, that's when Lardass' plan really started to work. Girlfriends barfed on boyfriends. Kids barfed on their parents. A fat lady barfed in her purse. The Donnelly twins barfed on each other. And the women's auxiliary barfed all over the benevolent order of antelopes. And Lardass just sat back and enjoyed what he'd created. A complete and total barforama.
I agree with you in terms of that scene. I'll just mention real quick. It's cool because it's a story within a story. And Stephen King is such a genius at that, man. I mean, he even does that in the most recent version of It that we were just talking about, where McAvoy's character, you know, is a writer in that iteration. I mean, he's good at, like, it's like almost like a one-off. Like, it's not even part of what you've been reading. You know what I mean? It's like a separate story and you're reading in the middle of the story that you were already reading. It's a real weird Inception kind of thing that he does. But that's a great scene.
I thought you were going to mention the puking scene in that film with the weirdest needle drop for a music cue I've ever heard. Like,
That was weird.
I'm a notoriously loud laugher, especially at movies. And I just like laughed out loud at that point because I'm like, what in the fuck were they thinking with this? Like, there's a lot of like, what the fuck were they thinking with this throughout that film? But just the fact that they did it and like, you know, they really go there at some points. So I was just like, I gotta love this mess of a film. I mean, I gave it a B+ on our show. So,
you liked it a little more than I did then, but I probably would say like C+ maybe. But I enjoyed it. I just, I don't know.
I didn't mind the length, Gerald. I said in my podcast, I think they used some of the length unwisely.
Look, man. As you already mentioned at the top of the show, I'm a dad. I got kids fucking all around me. I don't have 3 hours. You know what I mean? So I'm trying to go see movies, and my wife's like, "Where the fuck have you been?" You know? And I'm like, "I was at a movie." What do you mean?
I understand, Gerald. But if it was your fate, like, basically your favorite book of all time.
I get it, bro.
Very important to you as a kid. You're just like, I just want to luxuriate in this mess of a film. So that's
what I absolutely understand and do not fault anyone for loving it. So I'm with you, man. So, okay. So Stand By Me, you're runner up. So, we've crossed over here, like fucking crossover crazy here, but I'll go ahead and talk about Misery because that's my number two. And you mentioned it earlier.
We have three of the same movies in our top five.
Hold on, don't call me an asshole. But was Misery on our winter movies too? Don't say it was. I have the list here on my fucking thing.
We both have daddy brain, Gerald. Seriously,
I'm gonna go back just out of curiosity. Now
we have podcasts. We have wives. We have jobs.
I went back to our winter movies list, Justin, that we did
this past,
I think, November or December, we recorded that. And Misery was in my honorable mentions, and you did not mention it. So we're good.
Ah, good. Mixing it up.
So this will be new audio for people. Okay, cool. All right. So Misery, for me, as I mentioned when you talked about it a few moments ago, was in my top five horror movies of the 1990s. It came out in 1990. You already talked about it, but Kathy Bates, I mean, this is a performance of her career, in my opinion. I mean, I said it on that show. She's obviously a great actress, and I'm not taking anything away from the rest of her career, but I just don't think she's been able to top what she did in this movie, man. I mean, she is such, okay, you know, the wholesome, almost like grandmother kind of like figure And just very sweet, very wholesome, very innocent. And it welcomes in James Caan to the situation once he comes to, but it also welcomes you in as the reader, as the viewer of this movie, like, okay, you know, this lady's going to take care of me. And to have someone that you kind of entrust with yourself for the first half of the movie turn into what she becomes in the second half of the movie is scary, man. That's a fucked up kind of horrific thing to imagine. And when you're talking about Stephen King adaptations, what's cool about Misery is that it's real. Like, it feels real. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Stephen King's a very supernatural kind of, like, you know, Pet Cemetery and, you know, pets coming back to life and all this shit. But I mean, Misery is like, okay, you're secluded, snowed in, wherever in the middle of nowhere. And this lady takes you in and you don't have a choice because you're, you know, immobile or whatever. And she ends up being this kind of monster, you know, kind of real life monster. So I like that kind of aspect too about it too, because you don't get that a lot in Stephen King horror stuff. It's usually kind of like really out there kind of scenarios, but Misery feels really real and it's really scary to me and it holds up. Have you seen this recently? I watched it last October.
What not only does it hold up as a film, but the plot, the thematics behind it almost resonate more now. I mean, think about all the super fans out there that are Annie Wilkes is for something or someone who would literally, you know, commit murder for their love or of that thing, or like be really nasty, evil people for that thing. I mean, we see that all the time. So
you're right, man.
It's horrifying. It's so, yeah. I mean, especially because she was, you were talking about Kathy Bates. You know, that was the first film I saw her in, and I was like, who is this?
What the hell is wrong with her?
She is like lighting it up on screen. Like, this is great. When you read the book, you're like, who is going to be able to inhabitate this character? Who's going to be able to pull this off? And then you're like, someone new that, like, I didn't even know had this stuff and just like blew it off the screen. So
I agree.
It's amazing.
She's so good, man. I'm sure it'll come around at some point and they'll try to remake this. And I'm not saying don't go for it. This was such a good, I feel like this is an A+ film, man. And it's just so, it was so well done. It felt so real. The casting was perfect. I mean, it's really just James Caan and Kathy Bates. I mean, for, you know, 85-90% of the movie, it's really just the two of them.
Yeah. It could be a stage play. It's very Hitchcockian. It's, you know, but it's a thrill ride. There's not a lot that goes on, but a lot goes on. So
right. Yeah, no, I agree with you, man. I'm kind of glad we matched up on it because it's definitely one of my favorites. So that was your number three, and that's my number two, Misery. So we're up to our number ones, both of which have already been mentioned, but we get to kind of give our angle and side of the story, I guess. But why don't you go first, man? What's your number one?
It's The Shining.
What should be done with him?
I don't know.
I don't think that's true. I think you have some very definite ideas about what should be done with Danny, and I'd like to know what they are.
Well, I think maybe he should be taken to a doctor.
You think maybe he should be taken to a doctor? When do you think maybe he should be taken to a doctor?
As soon as possible.
As soon as possible.
Jack.
You believe his health might be at stake?
Yes.
You are concerned about him. And are you concerned about me?
Of course I am.
Of course you are. Have you ever thought about my responsibilities?
Oh, Dick, what are you talking about?
Have you ever had a single moment's thought about my responsibilities? Have you ever thought for a single solitary moment about my responsibilities to my employers? Has it ever occurred to you that I have agreed to look after the Overlook Hotel until May the 1st? Does it matter to you at all that the owners have placed their complete confidence and trust in me and that I have signed a letter of agreement, a contract, in which I have accepted that responsibility? Do you have the slightest idea what a moral and ethical principle is? Do you?
In my eyes, it's a masterpiece. You know, I love horror, and there are certain touchstone films in horror that, as a kid, I just remembered, I have to see this as soon as possible. You know, I don't care how old I am. If I have to sneak it, I need to see this film as soon as possible. And there's only a certain number of films, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Exorcist, The Shining is one of those films. And mm-hmm. I don't remember how old I was, but I know I was way too young. But, I, you right. know, I knew that it was, you know, Stephen King, Kubrick, you know, Jack Nicholson, all those things. I'm like, I got to see this as soon as possible. And so that movie is just seared into my brain forever. You know,
yeah, same here.
Nightmare fuel, you know, forever. I just think, you know, visually, I don't know of any horror film that's better than some of the stuff that he did in that film. And the performances, I love them all. I love them all. People, you know, harp on Shelley Duvall or you know, this or that. I love it all. I think it's great.
I do too, man. I was going to actually show her some love, and I forgot to when I talked about it. But I thought, I mean, I fucking love her in that movie, bro.
Yeah, and
I absolutely love her.
And if any of the stories, you know, there's lots of stories about how that movie was made, you know, God bless her, you know. She sounded like she was living it on screen and off from some of those stories. So,
right.
You know, I just think it's a classic. And the miniseries, the TV miniseries that I know Stephen King said he liked more, I'm just like, is this a joke? Like, really? Come on. So yeah.
I heard that too. I heard those too. And I actually got a couple mentions online, which, I mean, it's great. I mean, I don't remember that one nearly as well, which I think is the point. I think it's the point. You know, this movie, like you said, and like I said earlier, just stuck with me, man. I mean, we're talking 30 years since I've seen it, and I literally can't forget. I'll never be able to forget it. Do you know what I mean? It's just had that type of, and there's only a handful of movies that have that type of impression on my mind where they, like, I see them and they just never leave. Like, I close my eyes and I can see scenes from that movie. Do you know what I mean? I can't do that, obviously, with every film I've seen.
It's like, so, you could open an art gallery and just, like, lay out the movie, you know, frame by frame, and you're just like, art, just all across the board with some of the camera work and some of the stuff that he was doing. So
yeah, just a masterwork, man. Masterwork.
It's just a super important film to me personally, and just kind of like a gateway film for Kubrick. That was the first Kubrick film that I watched. I think it's great and a masterpiece of mine. So
I agree, man. Love it. Great pick. So your number one is The Shining from 1980. My number one, you talked about earlier, is Stand By Me from 86. That's my number one, based on The Body by Stephen King, which is a novella that he did. This is obviously not a horror movie. It's the second on my list that's not horror. So I guess I'm kind of, I don't know if I should have put a non-horror on as my number one on my Stephen King list, but
growing old and realizing that you're going to lose your friends, that's a horrible thing as a kid, man. Leeches on your nutsack, that's horrible, Gerald. Come on.
You're right. It's just as horrible as Pennywise. You're right. So, I mean, you know what's funny, man, is this is our Stephen King top five, and coming out next month on the show, and I don't want to give too many spoilers, but Stand By Me gets talked about on that episode, and we did tearjerkers, our top five tearjerkers. This is a very emotional watch for me, much like what you said, because of the nostalgia that's built into it, and that's kind of triggered for me whenever I see it or think about it. I told a story on that episode, so I'll make it real quick, but when I was, I want to say about 12 years old, I was in middle school, a friend of mine, Michael, I had a sleepover at his house, and we hung out, played video games, did whatever. And we watched this movie on VHS because his parents had it and they wouldn't let him see it yet. He, when they went to bed, said, "Hey man, I want to watch this movie. It's about all these like little kids. And I've heard people at school talking about it." And I'm like, "Sure, man." You know, he didn't tell me till after that his parents would have grounded him had we watched it. But not only did we watch it, that was the first time I'd seen it, and him, not only did we watch it that night, but we watched it like five times that night. We literally watched it over and over again until his parents got up the next morning. It was just like a marathon of literally just watching Stand By Me over and over again. This movie just stuck with me. The nostalgia is just like at a 10 for me on this movie, but you already talked about all the great performances in it. Kiefer Sutherland as a baddie in this movie, man, is just such a, just kind of a greaser, just kind of a douchebag, and just does that role so well. And that was early in his career. You know, the emotional scenes with Cusack as his older brother when they have the flashbacks are great. It really adds a layer of depth to that movie. And it's just a coming of age tale about, like you said, friends growing up and, you know, things are going to change. You guys are going to go your separate ways, but the connection's never going to vanish. You know what I mean? It's always going to be there. And Richard Dreyfuss in there, you know, the secondary character, kind of narrating it and writing the story as it's happening, was all I thought was always a really cool shtick that I wasn't really familiar with in movies yet at the time. So I love Stand By Me, man. You've already nailed it. The soundtrack? Did you talk about the soundtrack? I mean, just...
amazing.
I mean, bro. I mean, to this day, I could put that on cover to cover. I mean, just the oldies and the classics that are in there on top of the Benny King song. I mean, just... it's great, man. I love this movie so much.
Great. I mean, we talked about the cast, but that's just a prime example of a movie where the kids in the movie actually seem like kids, you know. You see a lot of movies with kids, and you're like, "That's not how any kid I think would act." And, right. And you know, I talked about it chapter. I keep calling it chapter one, but that was one of the instances where I like, this reminds me of the Stand By Me kids. Like you, they really seem like they were already friends before they started filming. There's already this camaraderie between them. There's a lot of, you know, really touching scenes that you really don't see in movies at all of, you know, two right. young boy kids like showing that they love each other and they're here right. for each other, or you're having a problem here. Here's my suggestion of what to do. Like, or you are good enough. You matter. Like, you really don't see that a lot right. in film. So it would totally be a top five tearjerker for me too, Gerald.
Right,
so
right. It is, man. It's cool because it is a tearjerker in a lot of respects, but it's also like an adventure movie. You know, I mean, come on, bro. The scene where they're getting chased by the train or they're running away from the train and trying not to get hit. I mean, just one of the most greatest
the junkyard scene, you know, all of a sudden they got a gun, like all that stuff as a little kid, as a boy who liked to get in adventures as much as I could. I was like, this is great. So
I agree with you, man. All right. So that's our five Stephen King adaptations. Do you want to do a quick wrap up of basically what is my list, but is your list? Go ahead.
Yeah, my number five was It Chapter One. Four was the 1989 Pet Sematary. Three was Misery. Two was Stand By Me. And my favorite Stephen King adaptation film is The Shining, the 1980 version, which is the year of my birth. So there you go.
Oh, I don't think you mentioned that when you said that when you were talking about it earlier. That's kind of interesting. I wonder if you attached your birth year to that too, and that kind of bumped it up even more for you.
Well, also, I was born in Portland, Oregon.
Oh, okay.
But my parents moved when I was really young, so I basically say I was, you know, largely raised in North Carolina, but I've been back several times and even been to Timberline Lodge, which is the exterior of the hotel in the movie. So
yeah, the overlook. Yeah,
it is super cool as well. So there's a little personal attachment to the film, just a tiny bit as well. So
that's awesome, man. All right, so let me real quick just a wrap up of what my top five was. So my number five was Christine from 1983. My number four was The Shawshank Redemption. My number three was The Shining. My number two was Misery, and my number one Stephen King adaptation was Stand By Me from 1986. By the way, Stand By Me also, I failed to mention, but you guys should check it out. I went on with Peter on Podstalgic, and I did a whole retrospective of that movie with him on his show. And we talked about basically from the beginning to the end and all the characters and songs, and that was a great episode. We did that last year, so I appreciate him having me on for that. So I'll tell you what, man, we're going to go over to social media and open up the suggestion box in a minute, Justin. But before that, I know you probably have about 50 honorable mentions, but did you want to just name a few of them real quick?
Yes. I have The Mist, which mm-hmm. which I love, and from personal experience is a movie that I took my wife and my mother-in-law to on Easter, I believe, we talk about this a lot because we remember going into that film and then walking out of it on Easter, you know, amazing, shiny Sunday Easter and being like, we want to kill ourselves.
right.
What a downer of an Easter movie.
Yeah, but, that is a tough one. Yeah.
But an amazing film in my eyes. I love the OG Carrie a lot. I think that film's great. I even love, and these are two ones that I get a lot of flack for.
Mm-hmm.
One, Maximum Overdrive.
Yeah, I kind of felt like you were going to go there. I've heard you talk about that before.
Bonkers film. Love it. Talking about posters, that has one of the... I had that on my wall as a kid. I love that movie, even though it's really stupid. And speaking of really stupid, I also love The Lawnmower Man. So,
oh, yeah. You know, I haven't seen that since it came out. I got to be honest. I haven't seen that in so long.
It is due for a rewatch, Gerald. You'll be like, this is where the 90s went. Holy shit, this movie's crazy. So
I remember enjoying it, though. I do remember enjoying it when I did see it.
Well, that was one of our first Stephen King double features on our show, Maximum Overdrive and The Lawnmower Man. So those two movies have a special spot in my heart. So,
well, let's see how many people I can piss off with my honorable mentions here on what I'm going to forget, because, you know, I limit myself to five honorables. So here they are. So my top 10 would have been rounded out like this. My number six would have been Carrie, which you just mentioned, from 1976. Mm-hmm. Just an absolute classic. Another one that has a lot of just unforgettable imagery in it, in my opinion. My number seven would have been It from 2017, which you already talked about. My number eight would have been a Netflix original movie called Gerald's Game, of course, because I'm Gerald and it is my game. So,
Gerald likes.
Did you?
You know, handcuffing yes. Ladies. Let's not to get the into bed.
It. Let's not get into it. I'm recording this, but yes. Wait till I hit stop. But did you see that? Have you seen that?
I did.
Yeah. What'd you think?
I thought it was good. I mean, that's another one. Again. That's another one where it's like there's not a lot there, but you know,
right.
I think Carlo Gugino did a really good job. Yeah. I hadn't read the book, so a lot of the like weird body stuff, you know, walking around stuff, I was like, what is this? But overall, I thought it was good. I mean, it's a Netflix film, so it's a lot better than a lot of the stuff on there. So
Yeah. And then my number nine would have been a film called The Green Mile from 99. I know you've probably seen that, right? With Hanks and...
Hell yeah. I mean, that's another super long film though, Gerald, so be careful.
It is. I do recall that. It's a drama piece, and that's another touching one too. I remember being really emotional checking that flick out. And then my number 10, I'm doing it, man. My number 10 Stephen King adaptation is 2019's Pet Sematary.
Ooh.
All right.
Damn, man. You're like working PR for this movie on me. I'm going to have to.
Yeah. I didn't know you were going to name it, so I didn't know that we're already going to be talking about it. And I thought people were going to be like, what the hell's wrong with Gerald? He forgot the 89 one. But mm-hmm. I didn't. I love the 89 one. But I just love the reimagining. You'll see. I don't want to give anything away, but like, there's some very like pivotal points in the original that are reimagined in this.
Well,
version.
That's the thing. I saw the trailer, and the trailer gives that all away, and I was like, "What? Come on! If you're gonna do something major like that, don't put it in the trailer, guys." So I was kind of pissed.
Yeah,
I was kind of pissed off at that, but you know, I'm gonna give it a try. I'm gonna give it a try and let you know.
Let me know what you think, man. All right, so I'll tell you what, Justin. Before I let you go, man, let's head over to social media. We got a lot of feedback for this topic, along with the rest of our Halloween themed topics. But I just asked everyone, you know, what's your favorite Stephen King adapted movie? And here we go. On Twitter, Cadavercast, who's been on the show before, I love Jeff, he said there's too many, but he's got to name The Shining, The Mist, and a couple we didn't mention, which I also love, Silver Bullet and Cujo.
Ooh.
What do you
think? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Good
I mean,
stuff.
Gary Busey and Werewolves. Corey Haimage. I like those too.
Matt Lewinsky, I love, and he knows what's up because he's got Stand By Me. He just actually didn't even say anything. He just put up a gif of them walking down the train tracks together. So I obviously we both agree with that one. Let's see. Well, you know, Paul from The Countdown said The Mist. He loves that movie.
Of course he does. He loves sorrow and sadness.
He loves everyone dying in a fog.
Exactly.
T TV's Travis on Twitter says it's a tough call. His favorite might be The Green Mile, but he also wanted to give a shout out to It from 1990 with Tim Curry.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We kind of touched on that a little bit. I mean, I don't think you and I are really saying one is better than the other. They just both are great, right? I mean, Curry and Skarsgård, they're both very different, but very good.
In terms of the performances as Pennywise, yes. Mm-hmm. If we're talking about the miniseries as a whole compared to if we combined both of these two new movies, it's like night and day to me. So
you're going to love this, dude. And I actually didn't even notice this when it came over a couple weeks ago on the feedback post, but here we go. This is for you, brother. So Chris, who is BergFan004 on Twitter, has a GIF and he says Maximum Overdrive.
Hell yeah, man. All right.
You're not the only one, brother. Actually, you know what? There's a lot of people.
There's a lot of love for Maximum Overdrive out there.
My local Alamo Draft House just screened that, a vintage screening of that, and it sold out, so I didn't get to go, but it sold out. I mean, like a day or two. So people that has a cult following for sure. Well, this is good. So Anthony Procopio, I think I'm saying that right, I'm so sorry, says it's hard, but he says Misery, the new It, which I assume he means from 2017, and then Christine. I love that. He's got the image of the GIF of him and the headlights coming on and kind of illuminating the screen behind him. Such a great imagery in that film. Green Mile got some shout outs. So Green Mile from Shane Beauregard over on Twitter. Another one for It from 1990, Mr. V, the Gentleman Monk on Twitter. And he's got a GIF of Tim Curry waving at everyone holding the balloons. Who's scarier to you? Skarsgård or Curry? Like, which one would scare you more if you turned a corner and they were standing there?
Skarsgård like turns into like scary ass shit anyway, so it's like
but I mean just in their clown no form career. I mean just in their clown form, I mean which one's more scarier to
probably Tim Curry to me, but he's like the one that scared me as a kid, so it's kind of
Skarsgård's too hot, right? I mean, he's just too sexy.
You know what I think is funny about the newest the chapter two is how much I thought Pennywise was in this one, and I hear a lot of people like he wasn't in there enough, and I'm like, have you seen the miniseries?
I said that too. You talking about the one that just came out, you mean?
Yeah, he's in it a lot more than I thought he would be. There's a lot of stuff, and I'm like people thought that wasn't enough, and I'm like, holy shit, like
I had the impression of that too, because I've only seen it once. I haven't revisited it yet, but it felt like he showed up like overkill in the last like half hour. Like it felt like it was literally all him that last act. But up until then, I felt like I didn't see him. I was like, where the hell is Pennywise? I just remember thinking that as I was watching it.
It was just a weird experience because I was like, I was comparing it to the book at the same time I was just comparing it to the miniseries. And then this is a big thing we talked about in our review. And a reason why I think it might have been too long is they're like, man, people love that fucking Pennywise. Let's like keep bringing him back. You know what? They also love those kids. Like, let's figure out how to have as many flashbacks as possible, no matter how weird the CGI stuff, you know, works or looks. So that coupled with the fact that, you know, they had this weird like Scooby-Doo plot of, you know, they have to separate and do all these things and then come back in the middle and then it doesn't even matter and you're just like, what the fuck, guys, come on.
We could do a review of that movie, because you're right, things are starting to pop mad. Like, where was the hotel, the people that worked at that hotel?
Where was anybody?
They were like meeting there and there's like no like bellhop or anything. I'm like, what, where the hell are you?
The only time I saw a lot of people was at that like fucking fair out of the blue, and like even that fair didn't really need to happen. I was just like, some of this stuff, I'm just like, you could just cut some of this, it'd be okay.
There you go, see, I got you to say that. That's it. It was too fucking long, brother.
Well, no, I just needed more. Instead of, I needed less Scooby-Doo like finding artifacts and like echoes of what they were going through in childhood, and couple it with what they're going through now, and then go around in circles and stuff. Like, I wanted more like character development with like them hanging out and them talking this through, and then, you know,
me too. Me too. How good was Bill Hader though? I fucking loved him in that
movie. He was great.
It was so awesome.
It was almost like, you know, he was Bill Hader in the movie, and he's like, "Oh my god, I'm stuck in this fucking clown movie. What's right, going
stumbled,
on?"
He stumbled in. Yeah.
Yeah. Him and James Ransone, the guy that played Eddie, anytime they were together, I that was some of my favorite parts. So
yeah, that was great. All right, just a few over on the Facebook fan page, Justin. I'll shout out Phil Rude over there. Said The Shining. He put up a GIF of "Darling, Light of My Life," with Nicholson kind of creeping up the stairs towards her. Let's see. There's one down here that had a lot that we haven't mentioned, actually. So let me touch on that real quick. Okay, so Drew Hallam from The Real Phils. You know him. You've had him on your show before.
Mm-hmm.
He said there's so many. Here's his top five, though. And we haven't mentioned, well, hell, all of these except one of them. But his top five is Misery, mm-hmm. Apt Pupil, A Good Marriage, 1922, and The Green Mile. I saw 1922 is another Netflix original that came out last year, which I really enjoyed. It was really, really good, I thought. I don't think I know The Good Marriage. Do you know that one?
I haven't seen that one.
So he's pulling out some rare gems there.
I was wondering if Drew, and he'll probably correct me, but someone on Twitter really loves Thinner, which I think is one of the worst Stephen King movies. I remember going to see it in 1996 and you know, being 16 years old, just being like, what the fuck happened? I like wanted blood. So I wonder if that's you, Drew, but I actually just pulled up like the Google of all the Stephen King movies. And one I forgot to mention that I also love, probably would have been my honorable mentions, is my boy Arnie in The Running Man. So.
Yeah, I was actually just about to mention that because it did get a shout out online.
Oh, there you go.
So Tony Vandenbush on the Facebook fan page said The Running Man and The Dead Zone. So those are two that we didn't talk about yet tonight. But
Dead Zone, totally underrated. I mean, very resonates now. Watch it now. It works.
That's right. So that's right. He was ahead of his time on that one. And then here we go. You're going to like this. But Becca, a new fan to the page over there, said Thinner. That was the only one she put.
I'm sorry, Becca. I just didn't care. I just didn't care for it.
Becca literally just got done cussing your name, and I'm like, here's her comments. And the last one I'll mention, because I love this guy, and he gives feedback every single week, and this is a great list. Tony Dobbish from Take Two. He says The Shining, Misery, and Green Mile are his top three Stephen King adaptations, which are all awesome, obviously. Okay, so that's it. Look, man, Justin Winters. Next time you're in Carolina, let's do this in person. You know what I mean? Let's get together for like an hour and we'll do our top five movies that we've talked about before.
I want to hit up the Draft House, man.
Yes.
I would love to hit up the Draft House there in Raleigh. But yeah, man, I am due for a North Cackalack, as I call it, visit. So
let me know, man. I'm thrilled that until that happens, I'm thrilled to keep doing this with you. And I'm so happy you came back on the show, buddy, to talk Stephen King, and I know you'll be back, you know, sooner than later, and I can't wait to come back on Movie Geek and do some drafts or whatever you need me to do over there, too. Why don't you tell everyone where they can find those and find you and Chrissy real quick?
So you can Google us, So I Married a Movie Geek. We're on a lot of the podcatchers. We're Podbean, Apple, of course, Stitcher. We're all over the place, but we're also on social media at Movie Geek Cast. At Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And we're also part of the Podfix Network, podfixnetwork.com.
So look, guys, all the P listeners out there, I started getting into podcasting about three and a half years ago-ish. And one of the first, there was like two or three that I started listening to back then that were, you know, quote unquote, indie podcast. And Movie Geek was one of them. And I still listen very frequently, love the show. And Chrissy, his wife, is also just hilarious. And you guys have a great banter. So anybody that's listening to this show, if you want to hear two, you know, married people kind of go head to head at their
two married people going
interpretation of movies, then that's the show for you.
Ever seen The War of the Roses? Imagine that, but they stay together and watch a lot of movies. No, I'm just kidding.
Imagine what Stephen King would write if he was writing about two married people having a podcast.
You know, I love Chrissy. I love movies. I mean, we just celebrated our 10th anniversary of our podcast. How many podcasts, you know, were around 10 years ago? There weren't a lot around then.
Exactly.
So, we love talking movies. We love talking to people who love talking about movies. And that's why we love Gerald. Chrissy told me to say hello. So,
I love her, man. You know what's funny about Chrissy too is she's a fan of her on the page over there, but she inadvertently, I don't know if you know this, Justin, or if you've picked up on this, but inadvertently, not on purpose, she always prefers my list when I come on the draft. I think she always votes for me when I come on.
Whoa.
Because you'll show her the board and you'll be like, which one's the best? And she'll pick mine every time. So we have a connection. So
well, we're in the middle of a 2000s films tournament that Gerald needs to jump in sometime soon. So we've
I'm ready, man.
We're 2 years down. We've done 2000, 2001. So we got a few years
okay
for you to figure out where you want to be. You let me know, man.
Yeah, you let me know, brother. You know what you're doing up until 2009, I guess?
We go to 2006, so okay. we do every year up to that, and then our semifinals are in March for March Madness, and those are 2007 and 2008, and then our finals are 2009. There'll be a big winner and a prize. So
hit me up, brother. You know I'm there for you whenever you need it, and I love talking movies with you on your show as well. So that's it, man. That was our top five Stephen King adaptations. It was a blast to have you on, Justin. I appreciate it. All of his information and Chrissy's information will be in the show notes. Make sure you check them out. Follow their page if you're not already. And all of our information, including our Patreon, will be there as well. Justin, until I have you back next time, man, I want to say thank you. Okay, buddy? I appreciate it.
I appreciate you, man. Thanks a lot. It's always a pleasure.
All right, man. Take care.
Thanks, man.
You've been listening to a Blazing Caribou Studios production. Support and subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/blazingcariboustudios.